Thank you, Marlene, and welcome. I'm going to talk about a study we've been doing for, about a year, Marlene, I think, something like that. Typically, we got it, like everybody else, we had to get an extension from NIJ. But this study is about evaluating the effectiveness of medium and high-risk offenders on supervision who are also on electronic monitoring. I suspect most of you have heard of electronic monitoring. This is a technique that is only about 25 years old in terms of correctional strategies. And I would argue that likely it's probably one of the fastest growing methods of community supervision. And I looked at some statistics. In 2000, there were about 30,000 people on EM in the United States. In 2005, it was about 160,000. I suspect today it's probably closer to 200,000. So clearly EM has been accelerating over the last several years, and that's true in Florida. That's where this study is being conducted, is in the state of Florida. One of the reasons, at least in Florida, and this is, I think, true in other states, is the Jessica Lunsford Act. This was an act that focuses on sex offenders, and it's mandatory electronic monitoring if they violate while on supervision, and the judge decides, I'm not going to put them in prison, I'm going to put them back on supervision. There's also been a shift away from what was called radio frequency, which is where someone was just tethered to their home electronically, to global positioning systems. These are methods where someone is tethered to satellites up in the sky going around the earth, and so officers can literally know where they are every second of the day, and that's recorded, and they know where they are within 4 feet, something like that. So it's pretty amazing technology. In fact, the DOC in Florida put me on it for about 3 weeks, and which was an interesting experience. I got some interesting looks in Publix and Lowe's and walking around and so forth. But the way it works is, real quickly, at least in Florida, is the offender has an ankle bracelet that's immovable unless they decide to cut it off, and then they carry around a box, a black box, and the bracelet is connected to the black box, and the black box is connected to the satellites. So if they get away from that black box just a few feet, then there's an alarm is set off. That's how the technology works in very simplistic terms. The fact is, the research really hasn't kept pace with the growth in this technology. There have been several studies, but they're not real comprehensive. There have been some qualitative studies, and there have been some empirical studies, but clearly, given the growth in this methodology, more research is needed, and fortunately NIJ was kind enough to fund our study in Florida. And we expect this study to be done in December, and what I'm going to talk about today is very preliminary results, but hopefully you'll find them of interest. And we're doing a process evaluation looking at whether or not, you know, EM is being implemented as intended. We're doing an outcome evaluation and a cost-effective analysis. And the data that we're getting is from the Department of Corrections in Florida. Anybody here from Florida by any chance? Okay. Florida has what I think is very, very good data, probably one of the best correctional data systems in the country. And they've shared with us dozens of files with millions of records. And so and I'll talk a little bit more about the empirical outcome in a minute. The other thing that's a little bit unique about this study, I believe, is that we're doing both an empirical assessment of EM and its effectiveness, and we're also doing a qualitative component through interviews with offenders, officers, and administrators. We had done a study of Florida house arrest cases and the effectiveness of EM on those particular cases. It was published in Criminology and Public Policy in 2006, I believe, and we found very good effects. And I'm not going to talk about that in any detail, but the point is that while we found a high correlation between being on EM and having success, we couldn't answer the question of why. What is it about EM that reduces the likelihood of failure while on supervision? And we surmise that, well, it may be a deterrent effect, it may be a social bonding effect, that offenders on EM are more likely to stay at home, be with their families, they're more likely to school and work, and maybe they start to bond to conventional lifestyles. So that's one of the purposes of the qualitative portion. Again, we're looking at the effectiveness of EM on failures on supervision, also whether or not EM has a lasting effect. In other words, maybe an offender is successful while they're on EM. Once they're taken off EM and not being watched every second of the day, maybe they are more inclined to fail. Whether or not EM works for certain kinds of offenders, does it work better for sex offenders than drug offenders, older offenders, younger offenders, males, females, that sort of thing. And again, how and why EM is effective. And we're also interested in, and this is through the qualitative portion, is how does EM affect offenders in terms of their daily lives? How does it affect their families? How does it affect their employment possibilities? The things that we sort of take for granted as being normal parts of our lives. The quantitative part, we're looking at several different types of outcomes, new offenses, technical violations, revocations that result in jail or prison, so more consequential outcomes, and also absconding, when offenders just flee and they can't be found. Obviously, our treatment effect is EM, and we do, because of the richness of the DOC data, we have, I think it's 128 different variables or factors that are commonly known to influence outcomes on supervision. So we have a tremendous number of control variables so we can identify the unique effect of EM on these outcomes. And the research design for the empirical part begins with propensity score matching. And I'm not going to go into the math behind propensity score matching today, but the basic concept is that propensity score matching is a statistical method to get as close to a true experimental random design as possible. Even though it's ex post facto, right, these people have already been on supervision, they've either failed or succeeded, but through this method, you can essentially match, you can take an experimental group, in this case EM people, and find equivalent people on all these 128 variables, right, and get equivalent people. So again, it's not random assignment, but it's as close as we can get statistically. And we're also doing Cox regression or survival analysis to look at whether they fail and the timing to failure. Let me skip over that part. So again, I'm not going to repeat these. The basic questions are, does EM work? Who does it work for? Is the program implemented as intended? And again, what's the view of EM from officers and offenders and staff? And this outcome, the empirical outcome study, we have 277,000 cases in total. And these are people placed on supervision of various types from 2000 to 2006. And 6,731 of those people are EM cases. So again, through this propensity score matching, we can find equivalent control cases based on all these factors to those on EM. And that's called a balancing approach. And once you can achieve balance, you know you have equivalent groups. Okay? And I won't go into all the details of the factors, but it's a host of things about their criminal history, their demographics, their prior employment, lots and lots of things that we know from prior literature are related to the likelihood of failure on supervision. So we're pretty confident that we have equivalent groups, non-EM and EM. And that, of course, if you don't have that, then what you find is not going to be reliable from a scientific perspective. And we've been building models on using different periods of supervision, and our preliminary results are statistically significant. Okay, so all things being equal, we're finding initially that EM offenders are less likely to fail while on supervision than non-EM offenders. And what we've done so far is kind of the heavy work in this sort of process in terms of putting all this data together and doing propensity score matching. So now we're ready to run models on lots of different types of offenders. Looking at, you know, do Jessica Lunsford Act cases, or does EM work well for them as it does for non-JLA cases? Looking at different types of supervision. In Florida, there's about 8 different types of felony supervision. Probation, sex offender probation, community control, which is house arrest. And actually through the, I mean, I've read about these and I understand them from their rules and the statutes, but going out into the field and talking to officers about the types of supervision, we've picked up a lot more nuances about the differences in how offenders are treated under different types of supervision. While this wasn't written in the grant, Marlene, we'd also like to look at post-release employment while on supervision and whether EM empirically has an effect on employment. And DOC fortunately collects very detailed information about their employment status when they're put on supervision all the way through till they're finished. So we're Jerry Gase, who is helping me on this project, along with Kelly Barrick from RTI. I talked to him, went to dinner with him last night and was telling about this idea of employment, and he was all excited. He thought that would really be good. So turning to the qualitative component of this study, again, we've been interviewing EM offenders, officers, and administrators. And we conduct these interviews. It's myself and one other person. The other person records it on a laptop. I take notes, but I conduct the interview. And these things take about 45 minutes for offenders and officers, and about 30 minutes for administrators. And we pilot tested the instrument. We got the instrument approved by the Human Subjects Committee and also the DOC. It's really been my work is typically I get databases and I, you know, do analysis. And so to actually go out there and talk to sex offenders and murderers and all kinds of offenders, and these are, again, medium and high risk people. These aren't low level probationers. They aren't. It's really a pretty fascinating experience. If you ever get the opportunity, I would recommend it. Just real quickly, these are the numbers of interviews we've done to date: 62 offenders, 24 officers, and 16 administrators. We have scheduled interviews in 4 other counties, fairly large counties, and that'll end up at the beginning of August. And we're also going to go to what's called the Command Center. It's in a little town outside of Tampa. The department implemented this Command Center about a year and a half ago because this equipment tends to falter pretty often, and there are false alarms all the time. Primarily, the box loses a signal to the satellites because an offender is in a building, a store, and so forth, and so they have to walk outside for 15-20 minutes, and the officer would get an alert, and he would say, walk outside. So there are a myriad of false alarms, basically, and with this command center, they get the initial call, so it doesn't go to the officer, and they can deal with that call, you know, 95% of the time. They solve it, a notice is sent to the officer, but the officer doesn't have to deal with it, and we found out from officers that they love that command center. This is just a map of Florida, just to give you a sense of that we feel like we have a pretty good geographical diversity in terms of where these interviews are being conducted. Okay, I'm just going to go through about 4 different issues that we're trying to address with these qualitative instruments, but there's several more. The little boxes at the bottom are quotes from offenders or officers. And so we've been collecting quotes. And some of them are, if you get a chance to breeze through them, I think I'm not going to read them to you. But I think they're pretty interesting. And I think it adds a little more flavor to some of their perceptions about EM. But the first issue is sort of their officers and offenders' perceptions about the effectiveness of EM. And this first part looks at offenders. So the first question being, does being on EM make you more or less likely to, say, abscond? Well, only 20% said less likely. 74% said it doesn't affect them, and 7% said more likely. Violations, a little bit more. 24% said it does prevent them from violating the conditions of their supervision. And in terms of new crimes, it goes up even more for offenders. 28% said, being on EM, I'm less likely to commit a new crime. And this was interesting in terms of getting caught for a crime. 71% thought they were more likely to get caught for a crime because they're on EM. Okay, I'm going to read this quote. The GPS is going to tell on you. That's what one person said. And it's interesting, too, because what officers do is they project this GPS equipment as if it actually can see the person 24 hours a day. Some of them will say it's an eye in the sky. They know what I'm doing all the time. They can see me. So why would I go and do something, commit a crime or violate because they can see me? It's pretty interesting. Officers are a little bit more positive about the outcomes. 54% said their offenders are less likely to abscond. 75% said they're less likely to violate. So it's not surprising. But still an appreciable amount say, well, EM really doesn't affect their behavior, the offender's behavior. And in terms of committing a new crime, it's actually a little bit lower, 63% versus 37%. We ask a series of questions about the impact of EM on the offender's employment. And in terms of obtaining a job, 63% of the offenders said it affects their ability to obtain a job. And all of those, 100% of those said it was negative. And some of the common reasons, stigma of being on EM, the device raises questions and concerns, and a quarter of them said, well, especially in this economy, the employers can find someone who's not on EM. And it's basically the visibility of this black box is problematic. You know, you can imagine someone wants to, we hear stories all the time, I went to apply at, this restaurant. Well, they don't want me to be a server carrying a black box, because then people are going to look at me and say, oh, that's a sex offender. I'm not being served by a sex offender. Clearly, employment is a real issue. And one in five said that they've been fired because of being on EM. And the other problem, too, is because the technology is not as good as one would hope, because they lose signals all the time. They, you know, if you work in a warehouse and you have to leave every 30 to 45, 60 minutes and go outside for 20 minutes, after a while, your employer is going to say, heck with this, I need someone who can do the job on a consistent basis. And this is interesting. The officers were in very much agreement with the problematic nature of EM relative to employment. 79% said it's difficult for offenders to find a job. Like the one quote said, who wants to hire someone wearing a box? And in terms of the likelihood that they stay employed, 71% of the officers disagreed. They think that EM reduces their likelihood of staying employed. This question about can EM upset employers, causing an individual to lose their job, almost 80% of officers agreed with that statement. This is somewhat telling also. We asked the question, okay, once an offender gets off EM, Is their job affected? Are they? Does it change? And almost 96% said yes. And basically, what they're saying is, 41.7% said the signal loss causes an inconvenience to employer. That goes away. The offender has more chance of getting a job and staying in a job. So again, it's the officers equate it mostly to the equipment. Do you believe the offender's job situation changes once they're off of EM? 83% said yes. We ask about shaming or embarrassment among offenders in terms of being on this black box. And 54% said they were embarrassed. I kind of like this quote. It's like painting a flag on your forehead saying, I'm a criminal. If they were ashamed to be on EM, 53% said yes, and it serves as a scarlet letter. That was a common quote, actually. That was not just one person saying that. We're also interested in terms of whether EM is an alternative to incarceration. And so some questions related to that. We ask offenders, do you think the judge would have given you or what kind of sentence do you think the judge would have given you if EM didn't exist? The judge didn't have that option. And a third of them thought that they would have gone to prison or jail. And although 18.6% said they'd rather go to jail. I mean, EM is a, we have another question there about, do you think EM is a punishment? And that's a high percentage of both offenders and officers say EM is a punishment. We asked officers whether they thought EM was an alternative to incarceration or an enhancement. A quarter of them said it was an alternative, but three quarters say think it's an enhancement. Mm-hmm. 1 minute. Okay. Here's some other data that shows officers think, 27% of the officers think that 50 to 75% of their offenders would have gone to prison if not for EM. So I'll skip over this. So basically, officers do see it, depending on the offender, as an alternative to prison. This, if the judge didn't have this option, this offender would have gone to prison. And I won't go through this data, but what we found also from an officer's perspective, or officers' perspectives, is there are a lot of offenders that they supervise on EM that they say really shouldn't be on EM. And now it varies by the type of offender. And on the flip side, they have a lot of offenders that aren't on EM that they truly believe should be on EM. So there's some certainly incongruity between who's on EM and not on EM, and the officer's perspective as to who this tool should be placed on to keep them from failing. And officers, 54% thought EM should be expanded, more EM. 25% said kept the same. 21% say reduced. So officers aren't, you might expect that they would be unilaterally enthused, supportive of this EM process. That's not quite the case.